avoiding her phone like the plague, though there was also an email from her father buried amongst them, and the bold subject line had been niggling at her all morning. "Well done, Isabel." She ducked beneath the surface of the water, sinking to the bottom where her phone was out of sight, before finally kicking back up and reaching for it again. She opened her messages, scrolling to the newest. "Theodore, I found your bag around the back of the dorm. Thought I was going crazy, smelling you every time I stepped outside." "Isabel, sorry, I'll come and get it," he replied after only a few seconds. "Theodore, have you eaten yet? I'm heading to the dining hall." "Isabel, meet you there." She navigated out of the message, clicking on another one. It was from last night, after she asked for Sato's number. "Ashford,
whatever you've gotten yourself into, do yourself a favor and back the fuck out."
She sighed, resting her forehead against the edge of the pool. What had Sato done that had all the other alphas convinced he was some kind of monster? Since she didn't know what to reply, she quickly exited the message and clicked on the last unread message. "Spade,
check in."
"Spade,
check in, Carter."
"Spade,
for fuck's sake."
"Spade,
Oscar is here. Late, by the way. So what part of check in didn't you understand?"
"Spade,
never mind Oscar. Now I'm the one you have to worry about."
She butted her head against the tile again, this time a little harder. "Isabel, I'm sorry. I was about to text you, but I passed out with my phone in my hand." She climbed out of the pool, wrapping herself in a towel and picking up her bag to head back inside. Spade's reply came through when she was rushing through a shower in the fitness center. "Spade,
I know. I checked Elijah's camera."
She frowned down at the message as she dried herself and dressed in a pair of tights and a cropped shirt. "Isabel,
how do I turn it off?"
She waited for a reply as she walked to the dining hall, but it never came. The food theme seemed to have something to do with cheese this time. There was fondue, croquettes, toasted sandwiches, antipasti, pastries, savory muffins, pasta, and great big wedges as decoration. She grabbed a toasted sandwich and juice and peered into the booths along the side of the hall until she found Theodore. He was sitting with his head in his hands, looking exhausted, but he quickly sat up when he saw her. She relaxed immediately at the sight of his smile, warm and wide.
"Hey!"
He waved at the seat across from him.
"Where did you go last night?"
She slid her tray onto the table, sitting opposite him. He dipped to the side, unfolding the thin rice paper screen so they were blocked from view, even though the hall was relatively empty. He sat back again, quirking a brow at her, waiting for her to find her voice.
"I left?"
She tried again.
"I noticed."
His smile dimmed, some of that exhaustion peeking through again.
"I fucked up, Illy."
She leaned back, ignoring her food in favor of folding her arms loosely.
"How so?"
His smile dipped completely, a troubled look fleeing over his features. He scratched his jaw, and that was when she noticed the cuts. They were deep and red, some of them held closed with surgical tape. He was wearing a light jacket despite the weather, so she could only spot the lacerations that poked out of the edge of his sleeve, but it was enough to have her jerking forward, reaching for his hands. He smoothly slid them under the table, pretending not to notice.
"I should have told you about, you know."
He leaned forward, tilting his head away from the cameras in the corners of the booth.
"The girlfriend thing," he mouthed before straightening again. "Killian said he explained why we did it."
"He did," she confirmed, staring at the edge of the table, where he was hiding his hands.
And it's fine. You don't owe me anything, Theo.
Except the truth.
He smiled at her again, and this time she could tell it was entirely forced.
I made things weird for no reason.
Stop it, she grumbled, folding her arms again. His smile shifted, a genuine glint of amusement peeking through.
Stop what?
You had a good reason to be acting weird, she rolled her eyes. I was teaching you how to swim, and the Ironside show made it look like something super angsty and dramatic. And then they combed their footage for every minuscule moment I spent in the presence of other alphas and twisted it all to look like I've been desperately trying to find an alpha boyfriend or something. Of course it was strange. He chuckled lowly, pulling his tray closer. It was stacked with more crepes than she could eat in a week, but he looked down at them skeptically, like he was worried they wouldn't be enough, before he began to dig in.
So we can keep going with the lessons?
He asked, between mouthfuls. She nodded, picking up her sandwich. She couldn't look away from the cuts. Had Moses done that? She wanted to ask if he was, if they were both okay, but she knew that she couldn't. As long as you don't care that I kissed your brother, she said instead. He dropped his fork, his head snapping up. He swallowed and then cleared his throat, and then swallowed again.
You could hardly call that a kiss, he said. Happened so fast I almost thought I hallucinated it.
Hmm, she agreed, taking a bite. It tasted like nothing. She was so nervous, but she didn't really know why. Her face felt hot, her stomach twisting. But it's okay, right? I mean, he's your brother. And I feel like I kind of forced him or something. He didn't want to play the game.
Neither did you, Theodore shot back, picking up his fork again. So maybe I'm the one to blame.
He laughed, short and sharp.
Moses doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do.
He seemed to be about to say something else when the screen suddenly folded back, Wallace appearing in the opening.
There you are!
She slid right in next to Theodore without waiting for an invitation, her hand landing on his stomach as she leaned over to bite the little bit of crepe left off his fork.
Yummy!
She exclaimed.
Isabel choked on her juice, almost spraying it everywhere. She slapped a hand over her mouth at the last second, but still managed to make a mess.
Theodore edged over on the seat, looking like he was making room for Wallace, and grabbed one of the serviettes from the table setting, handing it to Isabel. He did it all without blinking an eye. And that was when she realized just how good of an actor he was. She mopped at her face while Wallace slid her a quick, pointed look, almost as if to say, "Do you really have to make my job harder?" Isabel looked down at her juice-soaked sandwich and sighed, glancing over at her bag, which Theodore was holding hostage, sandwiched between his body and the wall.
"Hey, babe."
He smiled at Wallace, easy and warm, just like always, though he slid another inch away to give her even more room.
"Want me to go get you something to eat?"
He was also inching his plate away from her, and he put down his fork, glancing at the untouched cutlery on the edge of Isabel's tray. Wallace peered out of the booth, considering the food bar, and Isabel quickly slid him her fork. He slid the other one her way and had resumed eating by the time Wallace turned back to pout at the tray that was now out of her reach.
"That's okay,"
she said, frowning slightly as Isabel dropped the contaminated fork onto her tray.
"I'm trying to avoid carbs. If I gain any weight, Francis won't be able to lift me in class anymore, and he's the best male dancer we have. I can't afford to give him up."
"Makes sense,"
Theodore muttered around his crepe. Wallace grew quiet, looking at her lap, and Isabel wanted to groan out in frustration. The other girl wasn't an alpha, so her emotional spikes didn't batter against Isabel's chest, but she didn't need her ability to know that Wallace had been expecting a compliment. She kicked Theodore under the table, and his head jerked up and then to the side, taking in Wallace's dejected appearance.
But you know...
He curled his arm around her shoulders, giving her a little shake. Frankie is probably hoping for a better workout. I bet he can barely feel you when he lifts you. Wallace flushed, a slow smile creeping across her face. Francis. Isabel corrected beneath her breath, making Theodore smirk, but Wallace didn't seem to care.
Can I have my bag?
Isabel added, standing up and edging her tray to the end of the table. I'm late for... studying.
Studying what?
Theodore asked, releasing Wallace to drag her bag into his lap.
Musical theory,
she bluffed. It was a class she didn't need to study for, since her tutors seemed to have already covered everything they were learning in the second year module, but Theodore couldn't possibly know that.
Perfect.
He stood, dragging the strap of her bag over his shoulder.
I need some help. I was thinking of picking up a music class next year.
You're leaving?
Wallace's chin snapped up, her eyes darting between them.
I just got here.
You're welcome to come along.
He smiled, unaware of the sinking dread his offer had conjured in Isabel.
We'll be in the library. You have something you need to study for, too?
Wallace's lips dipped down.
Well, no, I don't. I guess I'll just see you later.
Perfect.
He edged out when she finally stood to make room for him, and then he leaned over the table and dragged his tray of leftover crepes right in front of her.
Enjoy some carbs, he suggested. They're good, and you deserve them.
Wallace melted, smiling up at him, her color deepening to a plum blush when he bent down to kiss her cheek. Isabel didn't know why it was so uncomfortable to watch. Theodore was being sincere for the most part. His concern over Wallace not eating was real. He had made the effort to soften the blow of him leaving her as soon as she tracked him down. But on the other hand, he was still using Isabel to escape.
If you're that uncomfortable,
Isabel began, her voice a whisper as they passed into the hall. Theodore only grinned sideways at her, interjecting with,
You haven't heard my new song yet. You have no idea just how much help I really need.
She chuckled, but immediately afterwards she was chewing on her lip nervously. It feels wrong, she admitted as they hit the pathway leading to the lake where the outside cameras were less likely to pick up on their words. Even though she knows, it still feels like we're making fun of her. Theodore shot her look, brushing a few strands of dark hair out of his eyes.
She's free to walk away whenever she wants. I'm not holding her hostage.
Not with your words, but maybe with your face, she muttered. His smile was sudden, wide, and utterly disarming.
Did the Illystone just compliment me again?
No, she almost smiled. I'm just calling it how I see it.
And you see a lot.
He touched her elbow gently to draw her away from the library, which she was heading toward.
Why is that?
She shrugged a little, peering toward Alpha Hill, where he was no doubt leading her. She felt no small amount of trepidation, but just like Wallace, Isabel wasn't being held hostage. She could stop walking or turn the other way whenever she wanted. But she didn't. She followed Theodore, even if it meant possibly running into Sato, or Ashford, or Spade, or Moses, or, hell, any of them except Killian. I'm used to being invisible, she answered after they walked in silence for a little while. My father said sigmas shouldn't be seen or heard, only felt. I got very good at picking up when people need me. Almost as soon as she said it, she wanted to take it back. Last time she had reminded him of his Sigma mother, he had almost turned feral. But when she peered over at him, he was only wearing a tight frown. his eyes their normal dark gray as he scanned the students milling about.
"I suppose that makes sense," he said quietly. "Killian is like that, because he actually is invisible, more than most people realize."
"You mean in more than one way, or..." She trailed off.
"I mean, he spends more time using his ability than people realize," he specified, motioning for her to climb the steps to Alpha Hill ahead of him.
She pondered over that statement right up until they were walking through the door to Dorm A, and then some sort of survival mechanism kicked in and she huddled close behind Theodore's back, hoping she could pass by unnoticed.
"There you are,"
a voice greeted Theodore before pausing.
"I thought I told you to visit the medical center."
It was a deep voice, textured and rich, familiar and foreign at once. It swam back to her in a haze, Sato's voice mixing in with it.
"Take her body back an hour or something."
That was what Sato had said. She was sure. But who had he been talking to? She froze, huddling closer. The body she was pressing against vibrated with a low laugh.
"Isabel," Theodore crooned. "You can come out now." "Fuck's sake, Theo,"
the voice growled out before a tall body brushed past, stalking off toward the front room that Easton had disappeared into the first time she visited the dorm. She stared after the man, cataloging the cropped dark hair with the barely contained curl against his collar. He was huge, bigger than any other alpha she had seen, so tall that he barely cleared the doorway he ducked through. She tried to dredge up a memory of the other alpha professor Ironside had hired, and an image of a broad, chiseled face flashed into her mind. Kaelin West was even more unfriendly than Sato, if that was possible, and he swore as easily as Killian. She wondered, not for the first time, why it seemed like these boys were friends with their alpha professors, except now it seemed like they were even more familiar than casual friends.
"Come on, cutie."
Theodore felt behind his back for her hand, drawing it into his and gently tugging her toward his room. They were only two steps into the hallway when Spade's door swung open, the russet-eyed boy appearing in the opening. Theodore didn't even pause, but Spade watched with a narrow-eyed look that she couldn't quite read until she was safely behind Theodore's bedroom door. He dropped onto the edge of his bed, shrugging off his jacket with a wince. Isabel sagged back against the door, her heart racing a mile a minute, until she saw Theodore's blood-soaked shirt. And then it felt like it jumped right up into the back of her throat. She stumbled over, trying to figure out exactly where he had been hurt and with what.
"You look like you've been attacked by a bear," she whispered, drawing closer, a look of horror falling over her face.
"Moses looks worse."
Theodore gritted his teeth in a show that was somewhere between a snarl and a smile, as though she had somehow insulted his fighting prowess.
"Is he in the medical center?"
she asked, watching as he drew out a first aid kit from beneath his bed, slapping it onto the covers beside him and rummaging through it.
"No."
He uncapped a tube of disinfectant powder with his teeth, spitting out the cap and opening his shirt, shaking the contents down over his chest and stomach.
"He's here. Mickey will take care of him. They're sleeping in the same room right now."
"Mickey?" She stepped closer, drawn by some invisible string as she watched the haphazard way he tended himself. She held out her hand, hesitant.
"Mikkel."
He stared at her hand, his stormy eyes crawling up to her face.
"Professor Easton."
He seemed frozen with indecision, and then he handed her the tube of powder. She curled her fingers around it, plucking at the blood-stained neckline.
"You should take it off." "You weren't supposed to fall into my trap that easily,"
he joked, grunting in pain as he peeled the shirt away, tossing it to the floor. She sucked in a breath, her fingers tingling as she looked him over. There were bruises and lacerations everywhere. Some deep, some shallow, some jagged, some clean. Interestingly, they seemed to be focused on his front and didn't rise above his neck. His flawless, sunburnished skin and all those perfect ridges of muscle and sinew were now horribly marred. "This is what happens?" she asked, her voice wobbly. He grunted out a sound that could have meant anything. She stepped even closer, and he spread his legs, allowing her to move between them. He leaned back on his hands slowly, watching her as she picked a cut on his shoulder and shook out the powder, carefully covering it. He gave no indication that it stung in any way. "I can't feel anything," she noted, astounded. "None of your pain."
"Can you usually?"
he asked, his voice tight.
"Mm-hmm,"
she hummed distractedly, moving across his chest. "It only happens with alphas, but any strong feeling they have, I can feel. You must have a very high pain tolerance."
"I guess,"
he shrugged, dislodging some of the careful lines of disinfectant powder she had drawn.
"You can feel anything? Our mom didn't like talking about it."
"Only the bad things, the negative things. But I've seen you, you know." She drew back, changing the subject as she chewed the inside of her cheek before spitting out, "Half naked, more than once. You don't have many scars." Like Moses, Easton, and Sato, she wanted to add, but didn't.
"You've never seen your dad heal?"
he asked, watching her carefully. She shook her head, and he pointed at one of the smaller scratches.
"That one,"
he said, dragging his finger to another, deeper cut.
"Was like that one last night. Alphas heal quicker, and we don't scar easily."
She balked, her mind racing back to Easton's face. She opened her mouth to ask what could have possibly happened to the heavily scarred professor before deciding better of it. "Why isn't that common knowledge?" she asked instead, putting away the disinfectant and searching his first aid kit, which seemed thoroughly picked through, for some bandages. There were no dressings or bandages left, only half a roll of surgical tape.
"Because we aren't allowed to learn about our abilities," he said. "And there aren't enough alphas around for people to see all the things we have in common unless they're obvious. It's the same reason people don't understand sigmas or mate bonds. They're too rare."
"It doesn't make any sense." She was too busy closing the worst of his cuts with the surgical tape to fully censor what she was saying. "They say all the people accidentally killing themselves to try and force bonds are one of the main reasons we're too dangerous to be allowed out of the settlements. But if they just let us learn more about it, maybe we could come up with another way."
"Those are dangerous things to say,"
he said lowly, causing her to jerk upright. She sucked on her lower lip, edging back slightly, immediately wary of him. Her father would have beaten her fiercely for those words, and most Ironsiders would likely feel the need to report her for anti-loyalist speech.
"Relax."
His fingers brushed hers where they now hung by her thighs.
"I'm just surprised. That isn't a common attitude, even in the settlements. And you didn't grow up in the settlements."
She curled her fingers into fists, drawing away from his touch. "Being a Sigma is dangerous, unless we refuse to use our abilities at all. Having a little more information about how it all works could literally save lives." His throat vibrated with a deep humming sound. He seemed to be agreeing with her.
"But we don't have the information."
He covered her fist with his warm hand, gently unclenching it. His fingers slipped between hers, making something slow and hot uncurl in the pit of her stomach. They were both staring at their interlocked hands, locked in a frozen moment of slow heat and skittering awareness. Theodore cleared his throat and pulled away, standing to fetch a fresh t-shirt. He cleaned up the first aid pack and his discarded, bloody shirt, and then walked over to his desk. Above it was a polished wooden shelf with an antler bookend on each side, a long line of books sandwiched between.
"This is all I've got."
He touched one of the books, looking at her with his brows dipped down.
"All the books my mom could find on the gifted. You're welcome to any of them."
At her incredulous look, he just chuckled, shaking his head.
"I've seen the books you're hoarding in the library cubicle, Illy. I know you're trying to do research."
She drifted over to the desk, perching on his chair with all the hesitation of an animal being invited into a trap. But Theodore only grabbed his notebook and retreated back to his bed, leaning up against the great big wooden headboard to frown down at the page he opened to.
Can I take one back to my room?" she asked.
"No."
His frown melted away immediately, and he regarded her with amusement.
"If you want to read my books, you have to read them in my room, with me here to supervise."
"It's like you don't have any friends."
She shook her head, relaxing a little at his teasing tone.
"None like you."
He scribbled something and then resumed frowning down at his work, tapping his pencil against his chin like he hadn't just said something that made her heart skip a few beats. She stood and reached up, her fingers drifting across the spines of the books. She chose one at random, drawing it down, surprised to find that it wasn't so much of an educational text as a collection of articles written about the gifted population and published in popular journals worldwide. The most popular topics were, of course, alphas and bonded mates, though there seemed to be a few scattered articles about dangerous abilities, which she skipped. She didn't need to read about all the examples the humans used to keep them locked away in settlements, living as secondary citizens. There was one on sigmas, debating whether they truly had abilities or whether their empathy was just a heightened sense, like the heightened senses of the alphas. She skipped past that one and settled on an article about bonded mates from a BBC journalist, since her mother loved the BBC channel. Had loved. Past tense. Her fingers shook as she flattened out the page, biting back the sudden prickle of despair. She had allowed herself to break that day, but it wouldn't happen again. The phenomenon of mate bonds within gifted communities has always been a fascinating topic, but the NATO ban on experimentation and study of the gifted people has made it typically difficult to gather data on how such bonds occur. It took me 5 years to win an amnesty pass to visit the settlements around America in a restricted journalistic capacity. They allowed me a set of 10 questions with absolutely no deviations, and I was forced to agree to submit the tapes of my interviews to the government. But nonetheless, we were finally given the green light, and several years ago, our study of the gifted mates began. 3 days into our tour of the settlements, one thing became abundantly clear. The gifted didn't want to talk. They thought I was there to entrap them into admitting they were trying to force bonds, a pervasive and dangerous rumor that hovers around many of the settlements and often leads to serious consequences. Since we only had one shot at this, we decided to pull out and apply for a further 10 questions, a preliminary interview to put our subjects at ease. We asked questions such as, "Have you ever heard of the BBC?" and "Do you understand that the BBC does not act on the behalf of any government agencies?" And the question that caused almost 3 months of back and forth arguing with the official gifted governing body, more commonly referred to as the officials, "Would you like to remain anonymous during the course of your interview?" Finally, we had our new set of questions approved, and we went back to the settlements. Of the hundreds of people we spoke to, none of them were willing to go on the record with their identities. But they were talking, and that was all we needed. Isabel skipped down a few paragraphs, eagerly searching out the journalist's findings. It seems that the bonding process can be split into two or three phases. The first stage being the most controversial, as most seem divided about whether it exists or not. This goes back to the belief that the gifted are a product of their gods, and that their abilities are divinely ascribed. Those beliefs, while dwindling, still have a grip on some communities, the communities who believe in the first stage of the mating process, the fated stage, as we've decided to label it, calls together the anchor of the bonded pair with the tether. It assumes that mates are fated from birth and cannot be forced, avoided, or changed. And it is the workings of fate that are believed to bring together those destined to be bonded. In the other camp are the people who believe love, proximity, and familiarity are the precursors to a bond, refuting the existence of the first stage. They believe the bond doesn't even begin to develop until the tether approaches death. This we have decided to call the death stage. The first camp of people believe that when one of the gifted destined for a mate dies, fate ensures their anchor will be nearby, giving their souls something to latch onto, allowing them to live on. The second camp believes this is all coincidence. The tether latches onto whoever happens to be closest in their death phase, turning them into an anchor of convenience. This school of thought has led many a young couple to attempt suicide with their lover by their side, hoping to force a bond. She pushed the book away, shaking her head. There was no point. The article wasn't telling her anything she didn't already know. Nobody could decide on whether mates were fated or not, but they always happened to be beside each other when the tether had some sort of random, or deliberate, accident. And then a bond half-formed, wreaking absolute havoc on their lives with all sorts of chaotic mayhem, until they completed the bond with a permanent marking. Sometimes it was in formal tattoo ceremonies that were carried out like weddings, but sometimes it happened by accidental scarring. She closed the book, deciding it wasn't going to tell her anything useful. Every article was going to be a careful, cautionary tale, toting the delicate line between what they were allowed to say and what they knew, but all ending with the same sentiment. The gifted were too dangerous to be allowed to live freely amongst the humans. The gifted believed they were created by gods and were willing to hurt themselves and others to prove it. Nothing screamed crazy like believing you were some kind of chosen one. She reached for another book, settling back into the chair to read a collection of stories compiled by settlement writers. Theodore watched her out of the corner of his eye, amused at the way she discarded the book she didn't like and sank into the one she did. She didn't seem to notice when he abandoned his work or when he left the room. He headed up to the outdoor kitchen, starting up the coffee machine. It was Sunday afternoon, so everyone was relaxing and getting ready for the week. Elijah, Gabriel, and Nico would have been sorting through mountains of laundry in their rooms, since they all exercised so much during the day. Kaylin was likely still trying to hunt down Oscar, but Theodore didn't know why. Either way, it seemed serious. It always was with Oscar. Mikkel was on bed rest after coming between Theodore and Moses again, but he would be fine. His body had adjusted to the constant abuse. He healed faster than anyone, even Nico. Theodore sighed, pulling out two mugs. He had already dropped off food to Mikkel and Moses after Spade treated their wounds. They needed sleep now more than anything. There was nothing he could do. "Is she still here?"
Killian asked, coming up the stairs with Kian. He sat at the island while Kian hunted through the fridge. Both of them had wet hair and towels were wrapped around their hips. The ropes they had tied over the lake were getting constant use now that the other alphas were facing the possibility of Theodore being the only one of them able to swim. They were fiercely competitive.
"Yeah, she's reading."
He poured the coffee and then hesitated, hunting down one of the trays they used to take food to one of the boys if they were too injured to get up. He added a few things to the tray, like cream and sugar, and then hesitated again.
"No cookies?"
Kian asked, peering over his shoulder. He was being sarcastic. Theodore stalked over to the cabinet of snacks anyway and tossed a packet of chocolate chip cookies onto the tray.
"Can I come?"
Killian asked. He was leaning back on his stool, his arms crossed and a pale brow arched in challenge, like he already knew the answer.
"No,"
Theodore growled.
"She thinks you aren't into her, asshole."
"I might not be." He shrugged a shoulder.
"You never know. I'm always evolving. I'm not set in stone. I could change my mind tomorrow." "I know you liked having her in your lap, even if it was just because she wasn't in mine. Nothing romantic is going on, so the lot of you can just back the fuck off. And you,"
he jerked a finger at Killian,
"you can stop trying to steal her away just so that she'll stop hanging out with me. We agreed I can be her friend as long as I keep up the show with Wallace, and that's what I'm doing."
"Maybe I just like her,"
Killian suggested, narrowing his light green-gold eyes.
"She's considerate. She's dry. She's the meekest, most unintentionally savage girl at the Academy. It's delightful. She's different to the stuck-ups that usually hang around us. If it's so surprising to you that someone else might enjoy her, then you can't like her all that much yourself."
"That's not what I'm questioning, and you know it,"
Theodore snapped back, before visibly shaking off the tension that lined his shoulders. Killian was his friend. They had no reason to be fighting. He had no reason to feel so on edge.
"Sorry," he grumbled, picking up the tray. "Of course, you're welcome to join us."
Both Killian and Kian kept quiet as he left the kitchen, but most of the tension lifted when he shouldered back into the room and Isabel didn't even glance up. She had moved to the end of his bed and was curled against the thick wooden baseboard, a blanket pulled into her lap as she turned the page.
"Do you always read like this?"
he asked, setting the tray down in front of her. She ignored him but must have smelled the coffee, because her little hand lifted, drifting over to the tray until it curved around a cup. She sipped the coffee, sighed, and went back to reading.
"So you like it black,"
he noted, picking up his own coffee. She ignored him again, which had a laugh building up in his chest.
"Wouldn't expect anything less from the Illy Stone."
He sat back against the headboard, reaching for the remote for the drop-down projection screen over the window on the opposite wall. As it lowered, he caught sight of Isabel's hand sneaking out toward the tray again. She caught the packet of cookies and dragged it back to her chest as she stretched out onto her stomach. She never even broke pace, carefully flipping the page again while her other hand tunneled into the packet. He was unreasonably pleased that she was on his bed, that she had made herself comfortable, that she liked his mother's book. She had picked the single book on the shelf that wasn't just a part of his mother's collection. It was the one his mother had written. And she was completely engrossed, unaware that her cropped shirt had ridden up, the smooth arch of her spine drawing his eye, before he shook his head and forced his attention to the projection screen. He pulled up the latest episode of Ironside, setting it to play. Usually, the entire dorm watched it together, but he couldn't bear to disrupt her. Besides, it was Sunday. Nothing important ever aired on Sunday.
It was an unspoken rule, just like the explosive episodes that came out every Friday. And it was nowhere near interesting enough to keep his eyes off her. Chapter 12. Nice Alphas. Isabel emerged from her book in a daze, sitting up and stretching out her limbs. Theodore was resting back against the pillows on his bed, watching a projection screen as it played the ending credits to the latest episode of the Ironside show. He flicked her a look.
Good book?
Yeah. She rolled her shoulders back and stretched out her neck. His eyes seemed to follow the movements. I love hearing stories from the settlements. We weren't allowed to visit much. She finally caught sight of the evening sky peeking around the sides of the projection screen. Shit, it's late. I should get back. She scrambled off the end of his bed and he clicked on a remote, sending the screen back up and turning off the projection.
Are you going to the hall for dinner?
She grinned up at him, slinging her bag over her shoulder. Stop using me to avoid Wallace. He groaned, his hand brushing down his face.
Okay, fine. But I won't be responsible for what I do to the next person who steals food off my plate.
She chuckled as she left his room, her steps light as she neared the common room, where she could hear the credits for the Ironside show still playing and see the faint lights from the TV spilling into the hallway. When she passed by, she kept her head ducked down and picked up her speed, hoping to pass by unnoticed. She really thought she made it, until something caught her backpack only a few steps from the front door, pulling her up short. Moses stepped around her, opening the door and using his hold on her bag to drag her through. As soon as the door closed, he pushed her up against it, his fingers wrapping around her upper arms. It was the only point of contact between them, his body held stiffly a few inches from hers. He didn't look good. His eyes had heavy, dark bags beneath them. His hair was mussed like he had just rolled out of bed, and his mouth was pinched so tightly it was only a cruel slash.
Stop coming here,
he warned her, his growl so low it reverberated through her bones.
Whatever you think you're doing with Theo, you need to end it.
He smelled like crushed petals, with the acidity of sap eating through the sweet, powdery perfume of a flower. It was complex, but underrated and subtle, like something you had to keep smelling to properly identify. His emotion, however, was not hard to identify. It crushed against her ribs, thumping into her like he was swinging a dumbbell at her, and it felt awful. He was confused, ashamed, hurt. But most of all, he was furious at her.
I'm sorry about the kiss.
He didn't let her finish. He ducked his head down until his dark eyes were tunneling into her.
He thinks he's invincible around you because you took it away. But that was one time, Carter. Next time, you'll be fucking dead. And we can't have that hanging over us right now.
Twice, she corrected with a frown. He froze, something awful flashing in those eyes. It was too dark to tell just how black they were getting, but she could only imagine the injuries he was hiding beneath his clothes. She didn't want to put him into another volatile situation.
What?
He breathed, looming closer. His chest brushed against hers, and for one insane moment, she found herself staring at his mouth, remembering their brief kiss.
Maybe this is something you should talk to him about, she suggested, trying not to sound afraid.
While Theodore and Moses didn't look like twins, they still shared similar features. They had the same wide eyes, the same strong, regal nose, and the same wide, angular jawline where they carried most of their tension. It should have been easy to look at Moses and think of Theodore. to convince herself he wouldn't hurt her. But it wasn't. Moses was a different breed to his brother. He didn't entirely seem in control of himself, and he didn't possess the good-natured softness Theodore sometimes did.
"What's it going to take?"
Moses breathed out the question against her temple, his scent wrapping around her, tinged with sweat and the tangy hint of blood. His fingers trailed down her arms.
"I don't want to threaten you, because I always keep my word. So tell me what it's going to take. Are you trying to win the game, Sigma? I can make you more popular than Theodore."
She scoffed lightly, but the fear inside her grew. Moses was serious. For whatever reason, he really wanted her to stay away from his brother, and he was willing to offer her anything for her to keep her distance. And if she didn't accept his offer, the menace shivering along the hard slash of his mouth spoke volumes.
"I'm not after anything." She pulled her head back as far as it could go, feeling the door bump behind her.
"You just have to tell me why. I don't want to cause you any pain or Theo any trouble. I don't want him to pretend to be in a relationship with the girl who tried to assault Sato. Just give me a good enough reason, and I'll stay away from him." Moses dropped his touch from her arms completely, taking a step back from her. His eyes were blank, and he leveled her with a stare, looking down at her in surprise.
"You know I can't talk about it."
"It. Ferality.
Just give me a good reason," she pressed, crossing her arms over her chest.
She was surreptitiously hugging herself against his cold gaze, but he didn't need to know that.
"You could get hurt,"
he said, still scraping his eyes over her like he was trying to figure her out.
"Bit late for that," she smiled tightly. "He isn't the first alpha I've known. Anything else?"
He set his jaw, his emotion cracking against her. There was more, but he wasn't willing to say any of it.
"I'll make your life hell,"
he whispered into the night, taking another step back.
"Was that a reason?"
She edged away from the door, moving slowly out of the camera blind spot in front of Dorm A. He noticed, his brow pinching together, though she couldn't read what emotion sank into his eyes as they swept over her. He shook his head.
"No, you've already decided. It's a promise."
"Do your worst."
She smiled, but there was no humor in it, no warmth. She was cold all the way through to her veins. She walked away, letting the moonless night swallow her up. She had already been standing outside, so thankfully her eyes were adjusted enough to hurry down the steps into the hill, with only the dim, twinkling lights that lined the path to guide her. They were set into the rocks lining the path, staring up like they were trying to impersonate the stars, just like the students within the academy. The temperature had dropped, making her shiver as she passed the lake, and it seemed that the night grew darker, thicker, as she ducked through the doors to her dorm.
"Wake up, Illy."
The voice was her mother's, calm and soothing, unwavering in a way it rarely used to be. Isabel's eyes flew open, her breath catching in her chest. Her room was pitch black, filled with the heat of bodies all around her. Her cheek was against her blanket, her arms pulled behind her back as someone planted a knee against her spine, digging it painfully into her flesh. She tried to pull her arms away, still sluggish and confused, but the rope around her wrists only pulled tighter.
"She's awake," someone whispered. "Get her legs."
Before she could even react, several sets of hands gripped her ankles, and just like that, she was immobilized. She tried to scream, but someone slipped a thick hood over her head, muffling the sound. better shut up, a female voice warned, or we'll tape the hood over your mouth and you might suffocate.
She bit her tongue as they hauled her upright, dragging her to her feet.
Got the shadows, Kiki?
The cameras won't see us, someone responded, but let's hurry.
She had no sense of where they were taking her, but after a whimper escaped her as she kicked her toe on the metal door trim leading out of the dorm, she heard the sound of thick tape unwinding from a roll, and she made sure not to utter another sound. Suffocating, outside, in her pajamas, with a hood taped over her head, wasn't the best way to die.
What is this?
She whispered instead, just loud enough that one of the people dragging her by the arms would be able to hear.
You ignored our warning, another female voice. We told you to stay in your lane, but you decided to one-up us, didn't you? We're just escalating the game you've decided to play.
She decided not to answer, taking stock of her situation instead. Her ankles were tied with rope, but they had given her just enough slack to take small steps and stumble along as they dragged her. Her arms were secured so tightly behind her back, it felt like one of her assailants was one more tug away from popping her shoulder joint out. She couldn't tell how many there were, but she had only heard female voices. The two on either side of her were both bigger and stronger, which wasn't hard since she was a Sigma. Still, there wasn't much of a chance of her fighting her way out of this. She could try to talk her way out of it, but decided to wait to see what they had in store for her first. Maybe they were just trying to scare her.
Hurry, a somewhat familiar voice hissed. The sun is almost up.
She was tossed suddenly, landing heavily against a curved wooden floor. It rocked beneath her, swaying as water lapped at her back.
A boat?
It must have been small, like the rowing boats some of the fourth and fifth year students used in the lake, because she could feel the sides against her knees.
Since you're apparently better than all our swimming coaches, this should be easy for you.
That vaguely familiar voice taunted her. And then they were ripping at her clothes. She flailed against the bottom of the boat, but as soon as she felt the cold metal of the scissors they began using to cut away her pajama bottoms, she stopped, shuddering in fear. When the metal slipped under the waistband of her underwear, she grew as cold as ice, wishing she could hold her hands over the apex of her thighs as they laughed at her.
She's trembling, one of the girls laughed out. How pathetic.
Shut the fuck up, another one muttered. The cameras will hear you.
The voices grew closer, a length of duct tape wrapping around the bottom of the hood covering her head. It drew the material tight against her neck, some of it sucking into her mouth as she gasped for breath.
Better start swimming, bitch, the voice sneered. This boat is broken. And by the way, Sigma, say anything about this to anyone, and we won't give you a boat next time.
The bodies drew away, and the boat suddenly jerked, bobbing unsteadily, drawing away from them. She stopped, gasping for breath, struggling to sit up with her limbs still tied. The boat swayed to the side, and she whimpered, falling still again. This was bad. This was really bad. Keeping as still as possible, she began to feel around the damp wood that she could reach with her hands. She discovered that the seats for the rowers had been ripped out, leaving a few rough sections of wood. One of them still had what felt like a rusty nail sticking out of it that had probably already caught against her arm if the extra sting was anything to judge by. She twisted her body to start rubbing the rope up against the nail, measuring the way the water rose around her face, which was pressed into the bottom of the boat. Whoever had been shielding her in darkness had retreated, because as she frantically rubbed against the nail, a muted light suddenly slipped through a torn fiber in the hood.
the sun was rising. She tried to turn her head as the water rose further, the hood growing damp and weighing down heavier over her mouth. Her wrists slipped against the nail, the boat tipping a little too far to the left. She eased her body against the right of the boat, a sob raw in her throat as she closed her eyes tightly, waiting for the boat to right itself again. She positioned the rope against the nail again and returned to work, the rasping sounds of her panicked breathing so loud inside the hood, even with the material trying to escape into her mouth with every inhale. Enough water had pooled in that she had to raise her head, her neck straining, her arms almost locking up in pain as she finally felt the rope give way. She reached for the hood immediately, tearing at the tape and ripping it away. Her feet were next, but as soon as she sat up to reach for them, the boat tipped again, and this time she wasn't able to steady it. She crashed into the water and immediately began tearing at the ropes around her ankles, fumbling several times as the panic gripped her, making her fingers shake. When she kicked the ropes away and broke the surface of the water, she saw the boat had flipped itself upside down, revealing several small gashes ripped into the base of it. She laid herself over it, using it to keep herself afloat as she took in her surroundings. She was in the middle of the lake, right in the middle of the academy. And the sun had risen. She was too far away from any of the lakeside cameras for them to see her in any detail, but she would need to swim back to land at some point, and she didn't have any clothes. The group of girls who had dragged her out of bed were nowhere to be seen, but there were a few early risers setting out for their run around the lake or walking from dorms B or D toward the fitness center. She spotted 5 people in total, and while 2 of them seemed to look her way for a moment, none of them paused. "Fuck," she growled out, some of the lake water spitting from her lips. "Fuck!" There was no way around it. She began to swim toward the shore, determined to get it over with before even more people woke up. Her tears mixed with the lake water as she thought about running all the way back to dorm O without any clothes, and she paused halfway across the lake, her chest squeezing in a tight panic that made it hard to breathe and even harder to stay afloat. "Swim, Ellie." It was her mother's voice again. Familiar but unfamiliar. She sounded so calm, so peaceful, no longer chased by the demon who hunted them both through the halls of their own home. Freed from Bronn Carter. "I'm going insane now." Isabel ducked her head beneath the water, closing her eyes and letting out a silent, desperate scream. She didn't want to do this. "Swim, Ellie." She pushed back up again, gasping for breath. Her chest hurt so much, not from the exertion, but from the panic. She kicked forward, her arms cutting through the water, trying to move quickly but quietly. She didn't look up or take stock of the people out and about until she was clasping the boat dock and hauling herself up to sit on the edge. She gritted her teeth, struggling to her feet as she fought back the need to vomit. She imagined there was a girl out there who would square her shoulders and toss back her wet hair, thrust up her chin, and strut forward, burying the humiliation and turning this whole thing around. There was a girl who might be able to hide her shame and insecurities, who might be able to walk all the way back to dorm O like she was a bad bitch and nobody could touch her, even when they did touch her. There was a girl who would use this for views and popularity points. And in fact, she could think of at least 2 similar situations right off the top of her head in which girls or boys had used nudity for a quick popularity boost. But Isabel wasn't her, whoever that girl was. The best she could do was swipe away the water from her cheeks, refusing to let any more tears fall while the cameras could see her. She took wobbly steps across the dock, almost kicking into a run as she tried to cover herself with her hands.
Carter?
The voice was familiar, but her ears were full of a sound like a roaring waterfall, and she didn't turn toward whoever had spoken.
Carter, what the fuck?
A hand caught her arm, whipping her around to face a chest. A lightweight, cream-colored sweatshirt. It was very close to her. So close, her nose almost brushed against it. The fight melted out of her before she even had a chance to summon it, as the light scent of clove and wood smoke hit her senses.
What the fuck?
Reed repeated, now holding both of her arms.
Gabriel!
He snapped out.
Help!
A second later, a body was pressing in behind her, and a second scent wafted over her. Since it smelled so much like fresh linen, she wasn't sure if it was Spade or his clothes.
Why aren't you answering?
Reed demanded. They were pressing uncomfortably close, until she could feel the hard muscles they had shown off at the Valentine's party through the loose, oversized clothing they preferred to dance in. But that same loose, oversized clothing was now doing a remarkable job of making her feel covered and protected.
Answer or we back off,
Spade said, his tone cool. She swallowed, her eyes drifting up to Reed's.
Say anything about this to anyone, and we won't give you a boat next time.
I was sleepwalking, she managed to get out through chattering teeth. She wasn't exactly cold, but she might have been going into shock. Reed's light gray eyes seemed even brighter than usual, the tinges of blue and white overtaking his pupils, which had shrunk to pinpricks. His slender features were heavy with anger, and she could hear the start of a growling sound building up in the back of his throat. His gold alpha ring seemed to swell. He released her, but didn't step away, as he pulled his sweatshirt over his silvery blonde head. He was wearing a thin t-shirt underneath, but it rose up a little as he pulled off the top layer, and his bare, hot skin pressed against hers. She felt overloaded, her nerves fried, her entire body shuddering. But he didn't give her any time to react. He dragged his sweatshirt over her head, pulling it down to her thighs as she fought to free her arms through the sleeves. Thanks, she mumbled, trying to sidestep them as soon as she was covered. They backed off immediately, and her face flamed at the wet patches on their clothing as she backed up several paces.
Keep moving,
Reed growled out, his alpha voice vibrating along her bones. She waited for the command to take hold of her, but it didn't. Instead, two Delta girls skittered away from them down the path, their phones in their hands, as they bent their heads together and whispered furiously.
Not you.
Spade spoke softly as Isabel backed up another step, his reddish-brown eyes fixed to her with unwavering calm.
You stay. Explain.
I already explained. She managed to expel the stutter from her voice this time. And what the hell does it matter to you, anyway? They didn't answer, and she backed up another step, waiting to see if Reed would use his alpha voice on her, since she could still hear that low growling sound vibrating from his chest. He didn't, but she could feel his stare burning into her back as she turned and hurried away.
Gabriel Spade didn't like when things surprised him. He liked order and predictability. He liked getting up at the same time each morning, wearing the same clothes for each day of the week, and knowing exactly what would happen wherever he went. The Sigma
liked to pop up when he least expected it, and he hated that. He hated that she had invaded his personal space, her rich cherry scent drifting beneath his door. Never at the times Theodore warned him she would be there, but always when he wasn't prepared for it. He hated that she had interrupted his practice time, and that he hadn't been able to stop watching her. Usually, something like that would have triggered him, and he would have ordered the disruption gone, remaining agitated until he could go through one of his soothing routines and reset, like it had never happened. But he was struck. Routines forgotten. Just like he was struck now, though this situation